Hi there. Welcome to Open Mic here on Moorhead State Public Radio. Today we're visiting with Rowan County School Superintendent John Maxey and District Assessment Coordinator Allison Matthews. Thank you both for taking the time to join us on the show today.
Great. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes. The school year here in Rowan County is off to a great start, and I see a lot of really positive things happening. Mr. Maxey, can you tell me a little bit about some of the changes that you've been implementing since you took the helm back in July?
Well, I've been trying to, analyze everything as we come into this position. We've got a terrific school district with a lot of great staff. And one of the things I really focused on was trying to build a real positive culture in the district. And I'm a big believer in relationships. And so my whole opening day was centered around building relationships with kids and with parents and with community partners. And so during that I don't know if you were able to join us that day or not, but on that particular day, you know, we really focused on the importance of the impact relationships have on those kids. And, I gave some specific examples back in my life, and I know everybody else has those as well, of significant educators that have made a difference in my life. And it's not just about test scores. You know, there's a whole lot of other, when we look at the holistic child, you know, there's a whole lot of other things that we need to address with those children. And so my philosophy has always been is building positive relationships. And so, you know, the teachers, and when I mention teachers and educators in general, you know, I'm talking about bus drivers, cooks, custodians, whoever it might be, all of those people in my eyes are educators and are influencing the lives of kids. And so to me, trying to build that positive culture is probably one of the biggest initiatives I've tried to push. And so we've even, you know, across the district, we've been celebrating those relationships. When I see those types of things going on in the school, I've been trying to highlight those and been trying to tweet those out as well. But I think that's probably one of the biggest things I've tried to implement is just building good, strong, positive relationships.
One of the things that we've been following here at WMKY is the district takeover of the old MCTC campus building. What's happening with that building right now?
For the last several years, they've been renting that back from us as they get their buildings and facilities ready. But this will be the last year that they'll have classes out there in that old building. So we have been working diligently with our architects and with our stakeholders, and we've been meeting with our staff because we're going to renovate that KCTCS facility into a central office area, and we're going to put our preschool in that building, and we're also going to put our alternative school. So the front part of the building where the KCTCS offices were originally, that's where our central office will be relocated. But we'd like to start January, February, sometime in that time frame, possibly doing some renovations to the central office area. And then the major renovation will take place in the middle part of that building, the KCTCS building. That's where we'll be relocating our preschool center. And the preschool will require some pretty considerable renovation because each of those classrooms have state regulations on the size they have to be, and also the equipment and things that's available in there. And they're also required to have a restroom accessible to those classrooms because of the age level that we have. So there's quite a bit of renovation in that area. We'll have to put a kitchen and a cafeteria area. We're also going to put a gymnasium in that particular area, which will be fairly easy to do because there's some really high bay areas that where they had shop classes. So that won't be a difficult process when I say we're going to install like a small gymnasium in there. But we'll have that available for our preschool kids and for our alternative kids as well.
Have you met with architects? Do we have any idea of what the scope of that project is going to cost the district?
Yes, we do. A ballpark figure. That we haven't bid it out or anything, but the architects have put some preliminary cost estimates on it. And we think it'll come in somewhere around $3 to $4 million. And, of course, all of that is bondable money, which we get assistance from the state with, all those construction projects. So it's not particularly money that has to come out of our general fund, but it is money that we can bond as part of our facility plan. And there's a lot of steps to getting all this done, and that's just a preliminary estimate of what architects think. For instance, our front office area where the central office is, when we originally looked at that with the architects, we were going to rearrange some of that interior walls and partitions. Since then, we have kind of re-looked at that and reevaluated that space. And I think we're going to be able to make do with the configuration that's there. And by just going in and trying to put in like carpet and refinishing some tile work and some drywall work, we can get that cost down significantly in that particular area. So our original estimates in the central office area was going to run somewhere like $600,000 or $700,000, but since we've reevaluated it, we think we can get that down to maybe $150,000 or so. And that's money that we can, if we save there, we can put back into other areas where the classrooms are. Because that preschool center, because of the scope of the renovation, that's where the bulk of the money is going to go, because there's a lot of plumbing work and that type of thing will have to go into it. Mm-hmm. But that building is really needed, because, as you know, the old preschool center, even though it looks really nice and we've put a lot of money in keeping it in good shape, that building has a lot of age on it. The roof's in bad shape. Our boiler system over there is in bad shape. So if you look on the outside, it's a nice building. Don't get me wrong. It's a good structurally safe building, but a lot of the systems are really old in it. And so to renovate that building would be really costly. So by moving over here to this center, our kids will have a new facility that'll cost significantly less than building a new building.
Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think that this is going to be a quick fix, though. Usually with these kind of construction projects, this isn't like, oh, next year's starting right. Head Start class won't be in this new building.
No.
Probably. Generally with this kind of construction, even though the front part is going to be cosmetic, maybe 2020 might be in there.
That's kind of somewhere where we're thinking. The central office essentially could move over there pretty quickly, because what we have to do there is not real extensive. And the way the building's designed, we can shut off that door that goes back into the rest of the building that leads into that area where the preschool will be. So we could possibly be in the central office in there maybe next summer sometime. Mm-hmm. But the preschool and the rest of the construction, we're thinking would take 18 months to 24 months, something like that, right. Depending on when we start.
It's a pretty big construction project right. To undertake. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
The Kentucky Center for Traditional Music invites you to a community square dance at the Round County Arts Center, 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 10th. Make new friends, learn to square dance, or just enjoy the music. Admission is $3 and free to students. All ages and ability levels are welcome. Come to the community square dance, 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 10th at the Round County Arts Center, Main Street in Moorhead.
Welcome back to Open Mic here on Moorhead State Public Radio. Today we're visiting with Rowan County School Superintendent John Maxey and District Assessment Coordinator Allison Matthews. Again, thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Ms. Matthews, as the assessment coordinator, I know you have a lot to say about the test assessments that came out recently. Let's talk a little bit about where Rowan students are overall based on the scores that came out.
The recent scores that were released, we didn't get an overall index score, and last year we did not as well. So overall, it's hard to give a final score because we don't do one index score. There's seven indicators in the new accountability system, and this year our elementary and middle school are rated in three of those. That's proficiency, which is your reading and math scores, your separate academic indicator, that's science, social studies, and writing, and growth, and that's based on your math and reading, and if you have enough of a population of your English language learners, your EL students, then that is configured into that score as well. With our proficiency scores, the index is set for us by the state, and our schools met proficiency. We do have one school that was below the cut point, but overall our schools met that indicator. On separate academic indicator, that's our science, social studies, and writing scores. So when we delve in to the data, we see a lot of gains at each school. It's hard to look at it by separate academic indicator because it involves our science, social studies, and writing scores. But with that indicator, we did meet that cut score in all of our schools with the exception of two. But even those schools showed gains, like one school in particular in social studies. Mm-hmm. On our growth is real hard to look at this year because it's so different from what it has been in the past. So with our growth index, the state is now making a projection growth score. So, for example, in the past, growth has been measured. The first year a student would receive a growth score would be at fourth grade because third grade's the first year they've scored. So this year, the way they're looking at growth is a student as a fourth grader would have a third grade score and a fourth grade score. So let's say that student in reading scored proficient as a third grader, and they were high in, say, the proficiency category. It's based on a 4-point scale, novice, apprentice, proficient, and distinguished. So as a third grader, they may have had a very high proficient score. As a fourth grader, they were still proficient, but within that range of proficiency, they scored on the lower end. The state now is giving a projection growth score. And so based on the trend that student dropped in that growth score, they are projecting that student in the future would score apprentice high. And so our growth is based on that projection with no intervention.
That sounds really confusing, not only for the people who are educating the students, but also the students themselves.
When you ask that question overall, we can go back and we can look at our novice, apprentice, proficient, distinguished scores, and we can compare how we've grown in those areas. With growth, it's a little bit different because it's a different system. So that's the point that I wanted to make. It's hard to compare the last year accountability to this year accountability because so many parts have changed. So we've tried to look at that individual data of individual students and where they've grown and meet those students on an individual basis. And we've seen growth in all buildings, and we've seen areas that we do want to work on in individual schools.
Now, there were three schools within the district. They were identified for target support and improvement. That sounds like a scary thing, but when I look at the numbers, 418 schools across the state were identified as that. So it seems like a lot of schools are in this boat. If you could explain what targeted support and improvement means.
It is a new term. It's new to us. The one thing that we kept hearing over and over is, you could be a high-performing school and get the label of a TSI school. And so how that works is, and we actually have schools in our district who fall under this high-performing, but there's a student subgroup. They break your population down into different subgroups. Those subgroups could be based on free and reduced lunch, your disabilities, your Hispanic students, English language learners, mm-hmm. as well as free and reduced priced meal students. So you have different subgroups. So you may be performing overall very well as a school, but you may have one subgroup, a very small percentage of your population, that needs some additional support. And that's how we are looking at it as a district, that we want to individualize, and we individualize our instruction within small groups. And so if there's a group that's not performing, then we want to know that data, and we want to use that in instruction and give those students intervention in order to help them progress. So TSI, it's how you look at it, but I think knowing how it's identified helps you to know that you can be a top-performing school and still have a subgroup that you need to give attention to. And that's how we're using this data mm-hmm. to strengthen our schools.
You talk a lot about individualizing for each student. And do we have the resources here in Rowan County to address these students in such an individual way?
I think the resources that we have, we maximize. And our tier one, or our core instruction that happens in the classroom, is individualized. We look at student data. Our teachers have just gone through individual teacher data meetings where we are looking at student by student, content by content. And then that instruction is planned in that classroom as a whole, but then small grouping instruction within the classroom, and that's tier one. Then we also have response to intervention, which is small groups, and this would involve all teachers in your building, all instructional assistants, and we provide a number of things for them, tier two and tier three interventions, as well as extended school services. Mm-hmm. So our resources that we're given, we really individualize, and we're very intentional on how we're using that money to meet individual student needs. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that is a strength of ours. We would always be open to more resources, but I feel like we maximize what we have.
That's good to hear.
If I could expand on that just a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know, I spent several days last week going into some meetings with teachers, and it's amazing how they look at individual test scores. And we do a lot of things throughout the year to try and target students where they're at and meet them where they're at. We give a MAP assessment. That's Measures of Academic Progress. We give that assessment three times a year. And that measures in all of these areas, these same areas that we are scored on, that measures where our students are at. And our teachers spend an enormous amount of time breaking that data down and analyzing that, and they meet on a regular basis at each school. And it's amazing to watch them and the ownership they take of those students and trying to meet their needs where they're at. So, and Allison just mentioned our principals meet with each individual teacher then to talk about their data in each of their classrooms to get the interventions that are needed there in the classroom. So this assessment system that we've got out now is all of this data that we've got now just recently that was released in the papers is all new to us, but it gives us more information than we've ever had. So it's actually very useful information. Mm-hmm. So when you see a TSI designation on a particular school, doesn't mean that they're not, as Allison mentioned earlier, doesn't mean they're not a high-performing school, but it means that we have more information than we've ever had to target a particular subgroup to make sure they do get the resources that they need. Mm-hmm. So it's really a good thing for us as a school district. And I think when the public sees that type of a label, they may say, oh gosh, that's an area of concern. Well, it is, but it's an area that we know that we need to target and put interventions into place. So it's good information for us to have as a school district.
Right. Now, some of the information that got released had to do with the graduation rate of students here in the district, and which was a great score.
Yes.
But one of the things that the state is kind of pushing right now is new requirements for graduation, and they're talking a lot about being transition readiness, and I think that used to be college and career ready.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So the language is changing a little bit, but so are the possible requirements. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what those proposed changes are going to look like for Rowan County. What are we anticipating that's going to come down the pipe?
Well, I think it gives us greater flexibility as a school district in coming up with graduation rates or graduation requirements. And so I just recently met with our high school principal and the assistant principals and counselors out there to discuss this very thing. And so it's something that I think will give us greater flexibility with our kids that aren't necessarily on a college track. You know, many times we lay out graduation requirements with the anticipation that everybody's going to go to a university, but that's not the case. Many of our students go directly into a vocational school or someplace like that, and these new graduation requirements will give us greater flexibility to implement things like maybe a technical math that we could put into place in place of an Algebra 2, for instance, that maybe a student wouldn't feel like that was appropriate if they weren't going into a four-year university. So it would give us the ability to tailor graduation requirements based on where students are at. Some of the concerns across the state, as I talked to some of my colleagues and other superintendents, some of the fears that are out there about the new graduation requirements is that they're less rigorous than in the past and could possibly lead to some districts trying to lower their standards for graduation rates or graduation requirements, and therefore leading to, not as stringent requirements. So, but in Round County, we've always required more than the minimum requirements. So this just sets the minimum level, but doesn't mean that we couldn't hold our students to higher standards if we wanted.
Right, and there seem to be a lot of opportunities for education for high school students with the Eagle Scholar Program here mm-hmm. at Morehead State. I know that the MCTC offers a similar dual credit program mm-hmm. there.
They do.
How many of your all students do you have participating in that? Do you know that off the
I don't know the exact number, but we have a large percent of our students that are participating in that program. Mm-hmm. And we're very fortunate in this area to have so many opportunities for our students because we're so close to KCTCS and we have a great relationship with them. And then Morehead State University being right here in our back door, they have been wonderful partners for us
yes.
and have provided tremendous opportunities for our kids. In fact, Allison, we were just commenting, she's got a daughter that will graduate and will be considered a junior when she goes into
when she enrolls
next fall.
It's amazing.
So it's amazing what opportunities our kids have now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just very fortunate to have such great partners right here in our back door. But we've also, at our last board meeting, a lot of people don't realize that it's not just here in our back door with Morehead State University. We've got students that are getting credit like at Murray State and places like that. So we've got partnerships all across the state that's really providing some fantastic opportunities for our kids.
Advancements in technology have really opened a lot of doors for students, even especially in rural areas,
yes.
I feel, where they weren't able to travel before. Now you don't have to travel. You can just
right.
hop online and get an education relatively easily
mm-hmm.
at this
that's
point.
Right.
And that's really great. Well, that's all the time that we have today here on Open Mic. Thank you guys both for being here and shedding a little light on how things are going in the district. I really appreciate your time.
Well, we appreciate you having us on today, and we look forward to being back again soon.
Absolutely. And that's it for today. We'll see you guys next Friday here on Open Mic.